श्रील गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, श्री श्री गौर आगमाद की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि So, good morning. Welcome to all. Vivian, welcome. And today we are continuing and somehow concluding today with our Japa retreat, which started almost a week ago with Balade Purnima, or did a little bit more after that, if you will. Although tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, we will be celebrating Sri Krishna Janmashtami, the appearance day of Srila Prabhupada, which somehow will be an overflowing of the retreat, if you will. So we conclude today, but we won't conclude today. No, we won't conclude tomorrow, in 2 days, and strictly speaking, we will never conclude. As we say, there is no end to all that is present there in Srinam, in the name of Krishna. But somehow, officially, if you want to put it like that, this is the last class today, where we will be sharing some concluding thoughts, some recap of what we saw till today, and some further ideas, and also invite and those who have been participating in the retreat, or those who like, to share some brief words about your experience also. But also, as usual, let's begin with a brief summary of yesterday's class, where we spoke about very briefly, it was briefly, although 2 hours is brief, about accessing the sacred domain of prayer. We began clarifying that the name of Krishna is not a prayer per se, it's a group of names, it's a direct addressing, but at the same time, it can and should be ideally chanted prayerfully. It may not be a prayer, but you can enter into the spirit of praying prayer, while invoking the name of Krishna. And as we also mentioned, in this connection, prayer is not something we do, but mostly an state in which we will like to maintain ourselves. It's a state of consciousness, state of prayer, not so much, okay, now I'm praying and then I'm doing something else that has nothing to do with prayer or something. So the idea is to enter prayer to the point that we become prayer. So we just made this play of words yesterday. No? Someone who writes is a writer, someone who runs is a runner, and someone who prays is a prayer. And again, there's no end to prayer, there's no end to the perfection that one can attain in prayer. It's an ongoing, eternal affair. That's the idea. That shows how that's the real perfection means there is no final perfection. If there is some final perfection in something, that's not that perfect, basically. That's the paradox of perfection. We also define prayer as trying to present ourselves before God with as much honesty, integrity, transparency as possible. Trying to be ourselves, trying not to hide basically anything, because we cannot hide anything from him, but we may try nonetheless. So the idea is, don't try that thing that won't have any meaning, because he's already seen through all the masks you may like to present. No? That's the very meaning of the word, to be sincere. No? I think we mentioned that before, no? Not in this seminar, but sincere comes from the Latin sincera. No? This comes from the time when in the Roman Empire they were selling these big blocks of marble to be carved, sculptured upon. And some of the blocks had some cracks. So the businessmen will like cover those with wax, white wax, cera, wax. Cera in Spanish we say cera. So you see the block and you say, oh nice, no cracks here. Oh no, you can buy this one. So you get that, and when you start working and you do on the cracks, you lost the whole thing. So there was another section in the market who were more honest, more sincere, and they were saying, this is a block, these are the crackings, sincera. No? Without wax.
I'm not putting any wax.
You see the crackings that you work considering the crackings. You are integrating the mess. No? So that means sincere, without wax. I'm showing the thing as it is, with crackings included, and you can create a piece of art out of that as well. No need for a perfect piece of marble for the perfect piece of art. That's more sound like cheating of the other people in the market. So we prayer means to do with that, with sincerity. Whatever we are today, individuation, as we mentioned, trying to be all that we can be today, try to be humble while addressing the divine. As we say, false ego cannot pray. If you have false ego, you cannot pray. False ego cannot pray. Humility can pray. So in that way, we have to approach God. And if there is something weird in the way, that's on our part. It's never on his part. We should be very careful not to cast doubts on the integrity of Krishna, on the divine, but always, not in an erotic way, but in a healthy way. If there is something to work on, it's here. I have to still continue the digging work, if you will. Because if I'm too certain about myself, about my so-called faith, as we say yesterday, that even is in opposition to faith. We mentioned the doubt, it's a place for healthy doubt. Doubt can nourish faith. Uncertainty, to be too sure about something, actually represents the opposite of faith. Faith has to entertain some degree of mystery, unknown, paradox. I like to say that in one way we are agnostics, because agnostic is someone who says, I don't know.
No.
So we know some things, but in one sense we are not so sure as to say, I know everything and I finish. So I don't know. I'm open to learn more. A form of agnosticism, devotional agnosticism. And again, that's the part we have to play. Nor we cannot play the part of God, and God cannot play our part. So we shouldn't expect that to happen in prayer. Each one has to be doing their job, not the role of the other. And this way we try to have to approach name now in the spirit of Seva, in the spirit of giving pleasure to the name, not trying to, hey, give me pleasure, make me feel stuff, but is it possible for me to make you feel something? And if I'm too unprepared for that, how I can become prepared for that? The ultimate goal is, again, to enter into the spiritual world, serve Krishna eternally. You have to prepare for that. That's not a joke. No. If you are there, you have to know what to do, how to do, in a natural way. And there's so much need there, as we spoke. The spiritual world means the land of love. And there is so much need. When we don't have love, that's not so much need. Some needs, when we lack love, yeah, we have a need of love. When we don't have love. But when we have love, so much needs, necessities come because we have love. Because that can grow exponentially forever. So the need comes for so many things. You will see. So we have to identify with the needs that are there. And how needy is God? And if I identify with the neediness of God, I become needy. Because he's needy. So his necessity becomes my necessity. And I have to offer myself in service to that. And having that one-pointedness, that determination in that particular direction. So prayer has to do with that, presenting ourselves. We gave the example of the Chataka bird. Chataka bird is this one who only drinks water from the rain. So he will be determined, I only want what comes from above. I don't want anything from below, but from above. And rain may come, thunderbolt may come, nothing may come. But he's determined and he has hope something will come. So he has hope and determination. That's a very sweet combination and very necessary one. Determination, hope. Determination, hope. And if that happens, as we said, not only a few drops will come, that's what he needs, but a torrential rain will come and flood the entire village. I mean, not flood in a negative way, but will rain upon, nourish so many others apart from that person. So the point is, if you are praying like a Chataka bird in the Chataka spirit, not only you will receive what you hope, but so many other personalities, entities nearby, around, connected, will be blessed as well. The whole world will be blessed by a sincere prayer of one single person. Even though the world won't acknowledge that and they won't give a Nobel Prize, to each one of those secret prayers, prayer people, if you will. Now, that's a fact. And as we say, the world keeps going around because of the love and the prayers of these personalities. So today, again, that's some words about yesterday, for those who were not able to be, or for those who were able to be, especially. Some reminder. And today we enter, again, this last meeting of our retreat, where we will share some concluding remarks, inviting at the end also whoever may like to share some remarks, and I will share some thoughts that somehow I was not able to share in the previous lectures as well. So, where to begin? I'll try to wrap up many things that we saw and also present the new ones, more kind of bullet point format, not some points, and again, concluding with some personal reflections and how to keep the momentum of the retreat while returning home. How to take home with us, whatever we go. So, we have been speaking about the name, about the fortune of having the name in our lives. And as we mentioned briefly, there is a special consideration of all this in the particular times we are living, and in which disposition the name is coming to us in this particular age called Kali, in Kali Yuga. Interestingly, if you study Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the main, our main book, it has 12 volumes. And the last one, the 12th one, is about Kali Yuga. So you read the book, in particular, that volume, and you may get scared. Because the Bhagavatam starts to describe the symptoms of the age of Kali. And you're like, I'm here? I'm part of that? Oh my gosh. And all the things that will happen in the future, how the things will degrade. And you say, like, this is the worst possible age. So, but the book doesn't end there. No, it creates that, it will create a contrast. So first it's saying that, and then it starts to speak about the glories of Kali, the glories of the so-called worst age. And when it starts to praise the Kali Yuga, at one point you're like, wait a minute. This is the best possible age. How is this? No? Is it the worst or is it the best? Now it starts to speak about Kalim Sabajayanti Arya, for example. Bhagavatam will say great Aryas, great knowers of truth, are praising and in assembly worshipping the age of Kali and praying to be born in that age. And you are like, but why? If it's all the things you say in the previous chapter is a disaster. But there is something that will make the scale, how do you say, tip on the direction of good fortune and blessedness. Now, there's many verses in the Shastra about that. But one that comes to mind is Kalir Dosha Nidhe Rajam Asti Eka Mahaguna Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Rajit. So this Kali Yuga, the Bhavatan keeps saying, is an ocean of faults. So still going back to this point. Terrific. An ocean of fall. Ocean means, if you are in an ocean, you don't see beginning, you don't see the end, you don't see south, west, it's the ocean everywhere. So Kali Yuga, faults everywhere. Or even if nobody has faults, you will see faults everywhere. That's Kali Yuga. So, Kalar Dosha Nidhi Raja Asti. So first line is like that. You are like, oh no, again Kali Yuga. Asti eka mahaguna, but Sukadeva Goswami is saying to the Raj Parikshit, there is one mahaguna of Kali Yuga, one great quality, which is so great that counteracts this oceanic level of faults. And you are like, what's that great quality? Please tell me, because I'm drowning in the ocean of fault. Kirtanat eva krishnasya mukta sangha puram brajit. By engaging in Krishna Kirtan, by engaging in the chanting of the names of Krishna, Mukta Sangha Param Brajit. You become Mukta Sangha. You become free Mukta from all Sangha. Sangha here means attachment, mundane attachment. And Param Brajit. And you go to Param. You go to the supreme abode. So you get freed from the negative. You are promoted to the highest positive. But this chanting of this name of Krishna, and that chanting, that quality, that practice, that yuga dharma, that spiritual practice for this age is so powerful, so blessed, that it makes all this ocean of Kali Yuga, as the scriptures say, to cross that ocean, when you engage in Harinam Sankirtan, the ocean becomes like the water contained in the hoof of a calf. So you can just like... it's there, no? So that's the contrast that the Bhagavatam is mentioning. This is the worst thing because of this, the worst age, but if you do this, it's the best age. So it can be the worst, still. Or it can be the best. You're choosing with which version of Kali Yuga you are living, if you will. And particularly in this Kali Yuga, which happens once in every day of Brahma, which is quite in a while, Mahaprabhu, as we know, is coming in a very unique mood. Krishna is Mahaprabhu with certain purpose and his own attempt to fulfill his purpose overflows him and becomes imbued in the Yuga Dharma and the name that he's given through Parampara. So we are receiving a very Namshrestam, a very unique type of name of Krishna, this unique type of Kali Yuga. So do we have, sometimes this Kali Yuga is called Dhanya Kali. Dhanya means like fortunate. Fortunate Kali. No? Generally Kali, again, doesn't sound too fortunate. But this is a very unique one. Because again, Krishna is coming to us in a very, as we say in the first class, very unique disposition, very fulfilled, very fortunate, very generous. My Guru Maharaj likes to say, he said, Krishna generally is accustomed to be surrounded by millions of Lakshmis and gopis and so much retinue, entourage around him. But in Kali Yuga, by the grace of Mahaprabhu, he's approaching your life, your heart, in the role of a sweeper. Very low profile. Now, this great personality, Mahalakshmi is around him and so all the Aishwarya you can possibly conceive, he comes with a sweep in hand, a broom in hand, to your heart. And entering your heart very humbly, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, I'm selling these magic brooms, you want one? You can try it, you don't have to pay, you just try the product. If you like it, you can keep it. You try, magical broom. My Guru Maharaj, this example, if you're in the Fifth Avenue in New York, with all these corporations and big buildings and lights and like neon lights everywhere, and someone just sets a shop selling brooms there, you don't have that much future generally. No? Like how you can compete with these huge monsters? But the person is a magical broom. You just try, and one try. Oh yeah, oh yeah, okay. And gradually, all these neon lights, corporations will go to ruin one after another. We close, clank. All this, of course, corporation neon slag means for material desires and all these voices calling, buy me, bite me, get me, control me, enjoy me, look here, take here. But if you embrace the magical broom, Srinam coming as a sweeper, all these narratives will be cancelled one after another. So in this way, Krishna is entering very humbly in our heart. And again, Krishna is very humble, so if Nam is very humble, we should be very humble to honor such a humble personality. As we already mentioned, and I won't enter into the details, but the importance of the third person of Shikshastakam, Kirtaniya Sadahari Trinalpi Sunichir. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say actually, we are initiates into the mantra Kirtaniya Sadahari. Sometimes he will, instead of saying we are initiated into the Krishna mantra, we are initiated into the mantra Trinadapi Sunichena. That's more important than the Maha Mantra. In which sense? Because in that mantra you get the spirit to chant the Maha Mantra. If you don't get the proper spirit, you can have the Maha Mantra, but who knows what you are thinking, feeling, doing. But if you have the proper attitude to engage in Nam Kirtan, you have everything. So those are our four regulative principles. Sunichena, Sahishnuna, Amanina, Manadena. The other ones are for being human, stopping being an uncivilized beast. But then comes the real one for the Bhakta, which is Sunichena, Sahishnuna, Amanina, Manadena. Humility, tolerance, respect, not expecting respect. So humility is really important. Again, Nam is coming to us with humility, trying to enter in touch with us. And for us to enter in touch with Nam, with Krishna, with reality, humility is required. No, I will say that without humility, you are not contacting reality, actually. you think you may be, but you are actually contacting some phantasmagoria, illusion, what we call. Humility puts us in contact with reality, real, the ultimate reality, the one we are interested in, Param, Dimahi, Satyam Param, Devatan says, Supreme Truth. It's very interesting because the word humility, I don't know if you have ever thought about that or if you know, but it comes from the Latin humus. Humus? Humus. And humus means soil or earth. So the idea of humility is something that is making you land on earth, no? Because the ego is creating some false sense of being high, flying. And you have to cancel that flight, go back to earth, no? Land here. Humility is bringing you back on reality. That's the idea of humus. So for us as aspirants to chant the name, what's just the perfection of humility in chanting? As we mentioned, try to offer our individuality in a tasteful way for the pleasure of the name, but without wanting to, how to say in English, without wanting to, like to, one second, to stand out, sorry, phrasal verbs, I always have problems with that, without trying to stand out, not like I'm offering myself as much as I can fully, but not wanting to, hey, look what I'm doing. I'm greatly offering myself to Krishna. You don't want the spotlight on you. You want to do that greatest of all contributions secretly. Once one devotee said that the Vaishnava, nice example, the Vaishnava, Sumati will appreciate that. You will see why. The Vaishnava is like salt. That's an internal joke with someone. Vaishnava is like salt. Why? Because now someone is cooking in the kitchen and we are hoping he or she will put salt in the preparations. I mean, not in the sweet ones, but in the rest. Because the salt gives flavor to everything. I mean, highlights, whatever. If anything has salt, immediately, this has no salt. But if someone has salt, you eat, but generally nobody praises salt. Now everyone will say, oh, very nice masala, very nice this part of cooking, but nobody says, very nice salt. But without it, nobody can eat it. Yeah. So salt is making the main contribution, but nobody's noticing that. Humble, very humble is there, allowing the lunch to be successful, but nobody will put a garland on salt. Maybe Sumati, I don't know. But do follow my point, no? So you are given a very crucial contribution, but without expecting any recognition back. So this is the same, trying to offer ourselves fully to the name of Krishna. That's humility. You do the greatest thing. You have the greatest chance of becoming proud, but you are not feeling proud. That's the idea of humility. It's not that I'm a nonsense, that I'm doing nothing great. That's why I'm not proud. I'm humble. No, that's not like this. No, it's like if you are like, I don't know, Maharaj, I'm very detached, and you tell me, but what do you have? Oh, I don't have anything. I'm homeless, so I'm not attached to it. No, I don't. You are not detached. You don't have anything to be attached. But if you have those things, let's see. So humility is the same. It's not that I don't have anything to become proud. I have all the things, all the greater things are coming, but I never choosing to become proud, but to increase humility. With humility works like that. It's like you can only increase it, if you will. The moment that you feel I'm humble, you are not humble. That's interesting. If you do, I don't know, go to the gym and you acquire some strength in your arms, you can say, my arms are stronger. And it's not that your arms will become smaller by saying that. You are stronger physically. But if you acquire humility and you say, I acquire humility, you lost it immediately. It's anti-reflective. You say something and you lose. So that's how it works. The price to have humility is to never feel you have humility. That's why the ones who have the most humility are the ones who feel they have the less. Yeah. It sounds contradictory, but that's how it works with humility in particular. This very unique but crucial virtue here. So as we are somehow students, we are disciples, of guru, disciples of this particular school. And this, the word disciple also starts with discipline. And this is the discipline for us, no? Humility, this third verse of Sikshastakam. Discipline doesn't mean like some rigid military mechanized force thing, like you have to be strict, you have to be rigid. Sometimes the Buddha uses this word, he's very strict. I don't know what you understand by that. No? Hopefully something healthy and deep and loving, not like here comes a military monster. Very strict. No? He's grumpy and criticizing everyone, like with Sudarshan in hand and whip in another, Ramachandra Puri like this, no? Only seeing defects everywhere. No, that's not strict at all. So strict means strict with yourself, as we say, not with others. And strict in this sense, no? Trying to to embrace the discipline that will take us to melt our heart, if you will. No? We have the willingness to be transformed by grace. We already spoke about that. We are calling for grace, we are crying for grace ideally, but grace will come with some agenda, and we have to be willing to be part of that agenda, as my Guru Maharaj says, and not so much trying to make Krishna part of your agenda, but discovering what's in his agenda and being part of that. Because so many lifetimes, no, of just, how to say, living in our agenda. And our dreams and fantasies and plans, and I will do this and this, and my agenda. And the more we enter into it, the more we are drowning in our agenda. And see, Madhvacharya, he mentions once, like a way of putting that, he says, each one of us, we are traveling in this samsara, this cycle of birth and death, from time without beginning, which means you cannot count how many lifetimes you have been in this trajectory, unending, you say? Uncountable, let's say. And he says, during all this life, we have been looking for our source, for ourselves, for the goal of our life, knocking the wrong doors, trying the wrong way. For some reason, we are learning from all that, hopefully, and today we are here trying to knock the right door, the right way, learning how to knock the door. But the point is, he said, during all these lifetimes, we have been traveling and suffering, and we have been crying so much in pain, that we have shed so many tears, that if you put together all those tears, you could make an ocean out of them, Madhvacharya will say. Mm-hmm. All the tears you shed during all your lifetime till today can fill an ocean. So the point is, in this lifetime that you have arrived at the feet of the name of Krishna, this is like a historical moment in the trajectory of your soul, no? in the timeline of who you are and all that you can be. You know, it's a moment to put an end to that ocean of tears. You can put an end to torrents, you say in English, of anguish and unnecessary lamentation, and finally learn to cry in the proper direction. It's not that we are sick, stop crying, no? But now you can start to cry for mercy, no? Learning to lament for the proper reasons. Krishna is chastising Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. You're lamenting for those things who are not worthy of lamentation. Mm-hmm. So, but that he's implying, there is something worthy of lamentation. He's lamenting there. I have no attraction for the name, despite all its virtues. He's lamenting. His lamentation is taking him to the third verse of Sikshastakam. Increase humility, and so on. So again, just in case, no neurosis, but crying, lamentation, there is place for that in a healthy way. Repentance, we spoke about that, anutap. And again, crying doesn't mean necessarily water is not coming, crying is not coming, but it's an internal. You can go to a theater school and learn to cry, or buy some onions and, Krishna, not like that, no. So we should try, no? As famously once devotee once said, Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say, we have to learn to cry for Krishna. And someone raised his hand, and what if I'm not crying for Krishna? Then he said, then you should cry because you cannot cry. Cry means healthy lamentation, again, healthy. Not lamentation that gets you in a depression and discouragement, because filled with hope, filled with shelter. Sometimes it is said with our tongue when chanting we should be with our tongue, the tongue should be chanting, the lips should be chanting, the ears should be hearing, and the heart should be crying. Mm-hmm. You have to have those things in place, this triangle in place. Mm-hmm. You can sing in the spirit of separation, with a mood of, I want to get closer to God, I want to serve Him personally. Because God exists everywhere, He's omnipresent, but in our school we want to relate with Him personally. He's a person, we are a person, and there's a relationship waiting for us. Mm-hmm. So how to increase my shelter, I'm Srinam, and so on. Mm-hmm. Of course, as I said, before crying for Krishna, like the gopis or the brajavasis will do in separation, maybe probably first I should cry because of my actual condition, basically. Yeah. As Mahaprabhu is saying, again, second verse of Sikshastami. Third verse is so important, but you will only get there if you understand what's in the second verse first. So that type of crying will transport us to another type of crying, if you will. Healthy lamentation. You have the cry, sometimes as we say, when we spoke about the yoga of crying. Nowadays you have the yoga of everything. So you can cry as a Bhada Jiva, you can cry as a Siddha, and you can cry as a Sadhaka. And many layers in between. So as a conditioned souls, we are crying, lamenting for that which is not worthy of lamentation. As a perfected being, you are crying for Krishna in divine love and separation, and so on. As a sadhaka, which is in between these two, as a practitioner who is no longer a conditioned soul, but is not yet a perfected, accomplished being, there's a corresponding crying to each stage. Yesterday we spoke about corresponding chanting for each stage. Okay, the same can be applied with crying or humility, put it like as you like. So, as we said the other day, we have to see where we are and begin from there. If I cannot cry for Krishna, okay, I don't feel anything, but you can, as I said the other day, but you feel that you don't feel anything. So that's something. Sometimes you don't feel anything, and you don't feel that you don't feel anything. Mm-hmm. That's worse. Mm-hmm. You are numbed. No? Numbed, you say? Like, unsensitive. So you may not be feeling any, or you may not feeling anything and thinking, I'm feeling so much. Who knows? So many possible. So a good beginning in the world of crying is crying to feel that I don't feel anything. Because sometimes, again, I don't feel that I don't feel anything. Anyhow, you see where you are and you find the corresponding tears to that chapter. Since we were speaking about Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, he will emphasize that this chanting that we have been speaking all these days is our main sadhana. Sadhana means practice. So when we speak about sadhana bhakti or bhakti in practice, there are so many angas or limbs of practice, but chanting is the main one for us. So he will say, actually the holy name of Krishna is our only sadhana. And he will say, if other sadhanas are helping us to sustain the chanting, or to develop the chanting, they deserve to be called sadhanas. That's what Jiva Goswami also mentioned. We have this Navalakshan Bhakti, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnushma. And he will say, any of them can give full perfection, but he will add, if connected with Kirtan. So Kirtan is kind of the central focus of all the other sadhanas. Somehow all of them revolve around Kirtan. And for example, I will give you an example to make this idea more clear. When we speak about Panchanga Bhakti, there's Navalakshan Bhakti, these nine aspects of Bhakti, but there's another verse which speaks about five of them. Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Mathura Bhas, Sri Murtir, Shradaya Sivana. Association with devotees, chanting the name, studying here in Bhagavat, residing in Vrindavan, the Dham, and worshipping Sri Murti with faith. So one says all of them revolve around Nam Kirtan. We could see it like that. For example, in Sadhu Sangha, you will engage in San Kirtan. You will chant Sri Nam with the sadhus. In Puja, worshipping Sri Murti, the names of Krishna are crucial in all the formulas that you invoke while worshipping the deity. If you take out the names of Krishna, you cannot do that, basically. If you go to the Dham, Dham Basana, residing in the Dham, the sadhus are sanctifying that place with their constant chanting. And that's one of the main points of going to the Dham. The Srimad Bhagavatam, here in the Bhagavatam, if you go to the Bhagavatam, as I mentioned, it glorifies the name constantly, as we mentioned these days, constantly. The last verse of the Bhagavatam is, I mean, the whole Bhagavatam, as we said the other day, so many stories in the Bhagavatam teaching us how not to engage in Amaparada, how to change chant properly. But even the last verse, again, 12th canto, glories of Kali, miseries of Kali, glories of Kali. And when concluding about the glories of Kali, of course, Nam Sankirtanam Yasya, Sarva Papa Pranasanam, Pranamoduka Samanas, Sannamami Harimpuram. End of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Last verse, Nam Sankirtanam Yasya. It starts glorifying Nam Sankirtan. That's the last word of the Bhagavatam. That's when Vyasadeva feels, okay, I can retire now. I attain fulfillment. But by leaving all the readers of the Bhagavatam at the feet of Nam Sankirtan, at the feet of Gaurlila, at the feet of Mahaprabhu. No. So please don't tell me that Srimad Bhagavatam has nothing to do with the holy name or anything. Or we can see in the other way as well. Not only in Sadhu Sangha there is Nam, in Bhagavatam there is Nam, but Nam is my Sangha. No. Not to avoid, of course, relating to devotees. But it's a way, Nam is my Sangha, Nam is my sacred place of residence. No? Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, there's no safest place on earth than in the kirtan of the holy name. So he will say, that's a place to reside. Okay? Nam is my puja, Nam is my object of worship. No? Some devotees have in their altar just the syllables of the name and they all worship that. That's none different from Hari. And Nam is my way of relating with Bhagavan. And what the Bhagavatam, Nam is my Bhagavat in the sense that there are two Bhagavats, the book Bhagavat, the devotee Bhagavatam, and the two want to give me the essence of Nam. There's this famous verse from the Adi Purana, Nanamasadri Samgyanam, Nanamasadri Sambratam, Nanamasadri Sangyanam, Nanamasadri Sampalam, Nanamasadri Sastyago, Nanamasadri Sastamaha, Nanamasadri Sampunyam, Nanamasadri Srigati. Namaiva paramamuktir, namaiva paramagati, namaiva paramashantir, namaiva paramastitihi, namaiva paramabhaktir, namaiva paramamati, namaiva paramapritir, namaiva paramasmritihi, namaiva karanam jantor, namaiva praburivacha, namaiva paramaradhyam, namaiva paramoguru. Yeah. So this verse is saying, this is Nam for me. Nam is the greatest goal, the greatest knowledge, the greatest remembrance, the greatest object of worship, the greatest guru. Nam is the greatest shelter. Nam is the greatest liberation. Nam is the greatest goal. Everything is Nam. Everything is there. Just to make the case. If still there was some doubt lingering. So this way we can see everything else is to nourish that main sadhana called Nam. And I have to relate with Nam. Trying to think, what's the favorable way, what to do, what not to do. Like the sixth principle of Saranagati that we have heard. Anukulya sankalpa pratikulya sevarjanam rakshishyatiti vishrusa goptritu ivananam tad atmanik shipan karpani satvidasaranagati. All then can be applied to our chanting. Accept what's favorable for the chanting. Reject what's unfavorable for the chanting. Have full confidence that Nam will protect you. Try to realize how the name is sustaining you. And so on. Atmanivedan. Try to offer yourself as a property of Srinam. And Karpanye, be humble when you approach Srinam. So all these six main limbs of Saranagati, or the process of surrender, can naturally be applied, expressed in connection to the name. Let's go to some words about japa. We mentioned that already, but a little bit more. And I will share some practical considerations. I didn't go too much into that this seminar. So this is a japa retreat. So japa, what's the definition of japa? No? This one nice verse that Hanumanji is mentioning. He says that japa is when the mind is in the mantra and when the mantra is in the mind. When the two of them are really together, that's called japa. That's a characteristic of japa. Mind is in the mantra, mantra is in the mind. Well, two ways of saying the same thing. And of course, the idea with this is, that's why we always emphasize, do not do second thing while chanting japa, because your mind cannot be in two places at the same time. And japa has to do with your mind and the mantra. Maybe you can do 30 things with one hand, two hands, one feet, the other feet, watching, hear, tasting, but the mind is not in all of those places. It's only in one. Even though your tongue continues, gone. You follow my point. So the idea is the mind has to be there, and the mind cannot do two things at the same time. It can only do one. So we should know where to put our mind. And as we already explained, no, if we don't relate to the name in a proper way, we may lose attraction for that by doing it, because of doing it wrongly, is not providing us the necessary experience to say, I want to do it again. But on the contrary, we develop some, like, as we say the other day, we were sending the message to Srinam, I don't like to spend time with you. Hopefully I finish this as soon as I can. No. And sometimes I've heard people, no, Maharaj, I cannot sing because I don't have time to sing. You are eternal, first of all. Don't tell me you don't have time. You have eternity. You will have eternity to do many things waiting for you in eternity. So don't try to go to eternity by saying, I don't have time. And let me see your daily schedule and let me see how much you don't have time. How much you have time for what, no? So we shouldn't cheat ourselves. No? If we say, I don't have time for chanting, actually that means I don't have taste for chanting. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm not chanting. Not because I don't have time. If you have taste, you will make the time. Necessity is the mother of invention. Time is relative. You are not such subject by time as a jiva. So, but of course, lack of taste can affect our experience of time. No? When you are doing something that you don't like, it lasts forever. No? The time extends indefinitely, unbearably. No? So one round is yugai tamnimeshina. I mean, like 12 years or more. No? That's what Mahaprabhu is feeling in separation from Krishna. But we feel like, when will this round end? The more you ask that question, the more it never ends. No? Krishna will make some arrangement, will add some extra beats, and it never ends. So if you are doing something that you hate, it will last forever. You follow me? But if you do something that you get pleasure from, it will pass so quickly. If you do something that you like, if you are spending some when you were a kid and playing with your friends, absorbing playing 7 hours, and your mom comes, it's time for dinner, and you're like, already? I mean, we were just playing a little bit. Now you are playing 7 hours. But I was having so much fun that it was like, shoom. So chanting should ideally pass, the time during chanting should pass quickly in that sense. No? Like, so of course we have to ask ourselves, how do I feel my daily hours of japa, or hopefully hours or minutes or whatever, my daily type of japa, how do I feel it subjectively? Do I feel it as slow, time is never ending? Probably I'm being inattentive in that case. Again, and not to chastise ourselves, just to take the necessary measurements to make the experience worthy. Because again, if you multiply something, you do something you hate, and you multiply that, and you do that every single day of your life, at what point, I don't know what will come as a result of that. So better we realize that on time and try to do it in another way, in a way that is more giving us real result. If we chant properly, result will be there. No? As we already mentioned, the inattentive chanting, was the why inattentive chanting is there? Because I'm not honoring japa as a sacred relationship, because that's what he's chanting, establishing sacred relationship with God through his name. And if something is a sacred relationship, it deserves my full attention, my full participation. Remember, Sankirtan is a very participatory, bhakti is a very participatory process. It's a relationship. Again, you have to participate in the relationship. You cannot expect the other person will do everything. I don't have to participate. That's a monologue. There's no dialogue. There's no second one there. So sacred relationship expects or demands, in a healthy way, full attention, at least trying to do that. Even something that is recommended is to do like a sankalpa. Anukulya sankalpa. Sankalpa means a firm vow, like establishing my determination. Okay, today I will do mauna brat. Today I will chant one lag, whatever may be the vow in which, whatever day of my life. In this case, you can do sankalpa before starting your chanting to yourself. No, like, I will be fully present during my chanting. At least I will try. But I'll try to determine and to focus in that direction. If you don't start chanting with that determination, you lost the battle before beginning it, basically. Again, the mind will swallow you after 5 seconds. And you're like, going shopping here and there for 2 hours. No? And for sure, after those 2 hours, you won't feel too much change. But just like, your mind was like jumping, bumping here and there, like a mosquito, like trying to find somewhere. So that's not the idea. So sometimes it helps. Spend some few minutes before and turn, trying to have them some prayer determination. I'll try to focus in this direction. This is a sacred relationship. I'll be present. I'll participate in it. And in this way, trying to increase our eagerness, no? Trying to chant as we really need that. No? Without God, we are dead, basically. No? Yesterday, Lisa was telling me that. No? Without Him, I will be dead. I said, oh yeah, of course, all of us. We wouldn't exist, basically. But sometimes I hear devotees also sharing this type of recommendation, like, if you chant every single round of your life as if it's the last round of your life, you will be more focused. Mm-hmm. Yes, but no? The quality of your japa may improve, like the attention of that moment, but that's more an Vaidhi-bhakti interpretation of that. Fear of death. I may be dying, and so better I will concentrate. That's not the type of motivation we want to have when chanting. No? It's the last one, so I have to... No? So a more raga mark of interpretation in our particular tradition will be, had to do with the word utkanta. No? It's a very interesting word, utkanta, which translates as eagerness. But Sanskrit's etymology is very interesting. Utkanta, no? Kanta, what does it mean, kanta? The other day I spoke about akanta. Kanti. Kanta. Mm-hmm. So, neck, throat, whatever. And ut here, ut means up. So utkanta means up to the, almost like akanta, but the point is eagerness. No? What's the idea of eagerness with till the neck? Basically, it's like you are like, like if you are in the water and the water is coming, no. So the eagerness is, oh Krishna, if you don't give me your mercy now, I'll die. No, I'll die if you don't give me mercy. Urgency, sense of urgency. No? Which that's a much more ragamark oriented. That this may be my last run. I may die at any moment. Better I concentrate. I don't want to leave my body thinking nonsense. Yes, but now you will go to Vaikuntha like that. But utkanta is more, no? To have this sense of urgency again. What's in your list of priorities? As we always tell the devotees, we were joking the other day, when you wake up, don't take your cell phone as the very first thing you do when you open your eyes. Or you even take your phone without opening your eyes. And you start like, and you say, well, there's no urgency to do that. It can wait. No, Maharaj, but maybe some urgency, something important. Yeah, there is some urgency. You have to become Krishna conscious. That's really urgent. That's the greatest emergency on earth. All the other things come after in the list of priorities. Sorry to tell, but it's like that. You follow me? So you don't have yourself this sense of urgency. Not neurosis again, not like, but I need that, and some eagerness, then you won't invest your heart there. Famous example is Draupadi. Also Draupadi, she was being, disrobed in the assembly of the Kurus, famous scene in the Mahabharata. And she's insulted publicly, and the Kurus try to take her sari away. And she raises one hand, calling for Krishna, and Govinda.
Holding her.
But with the other hand, she's like trying to keep the, the sari that is being taken from her away, no? So she's still trying to control the situation, half. And half she's asking, Krishna, give me mercy, help me. Krishna says, no, it doesn't work like that. That's not utkanta. That's not emergency call. Throw your two arms to the air and call me fully. Don't try to control the situation yourself. So when she puts the two arms, and then Krishna appears and appears in the form of unlimited sari. But he was waiting. Only one, no, it's not only one hand. No, it's like you're chanting one hand, the other hand is no, checking the messages. No, two hands. Two hands up. Not one hand like this. One hand like this and the other hand like, how do you say, like this? No, it doesn't work. That's the contemporary version of that lila. So sometimes we wonder, no, why Krishna is not reciprocating when I'm calling him? Probably because you are not even raising one hand. No, you have you have one hand in the japa mala, but you have one finger outside, bit back, and with that finger you may be doing this, and the other one, the two hands are doing it. So it's like Krishna say, no, this is a mess. No. And you're supposed to be calling me? I cannot respond to that call. That's not a call. And so why Krishna is not reciprocating, like he reciprocated with Draupadi when I called him? Actually, Krishna is perfect. He's reciprocating perfectly with my lack of attention. He's reciprocating. Atman prabhadinte tam stataiva bhajamyaham. He's perfectly reciprocating with my lack of urgency in developing a relationship with him. So I don't want something too serious with him. Okay, he won't impose himself. Again, he's famous for not putting pressure. Love is voluntary. That's the charm of love. It's not that I'm forcing you to love me, you're forcing me to love you. It's like the two parts invest their agency and will. I love you. I choose. I make the choice with all the risks of love, if you will. So if Krishna says, you don't have any urgency in developing a relationship with me, okay, so I'll keep waiting. You follow my point? So there, we shouldn't feel it at all. Why Krishna is not replying, not reciprocating? But the point is, how much urgency do I have? So maybe some of them, of this may be one of the main obstacles that we have to realize first, again, acknowledge, and then work on. And that will give us very deep realizations. One interesting way of thinking of what does it mean to have a realization in japa, you can put it like that. Because sometimes we think realization in japa means I have to hear Krishna's flute at one point and see something, have some mystical vision. And as we say, we are not after different colors in the air or things like this. Mm-hmm. You know? One realization in japa, to be just like immediate and practical, is you acknowledge which are those obstacles that are preventing you to reach the next level of prayer. You do some exploration in your own heart. Which are the obstacles that in this present stage are preventing me from attaining the next level of prayer? And then acknowledge which is the specific type of mercy that I need to pray for to counteract those obstacles. And the result of that combination is you will have an insight in your japa. Something will come, something will happen in your life. Be sure. Maybe it's not happening after immediately in that second, but eventually it will be everything is coming. Krishna is making all the arrangements for sending the proper reply to them. This is an interesting way of conceiving having a realization in japa. Which are my present obstacles? What type of mercy do I need to overcome those obstacles? I'm praying for that. And Krishna will reply, for sure. And you have to be attentive to that reply. Again, don't run off from that and then ask Krishna, give me mercy to counteract that mercy you sent me before. Yeah, and another thing that may help is to chant with this feeling of mamata. I think we spoke about that. No? Mamata means possessiveness. Or possessiveness with Krishna in the sense of, I have a relationship with him. He is my, whatever, friend, lover, shelter, something to begin with, my. To replace the sense of my that we develop through false ego in this world. No? To feel some sense of my-ness, I-ness and my-ness in relation to him. Because again, every person has a unique relationship with Krishna, ultimately. So that's very specific. Raga Bhakti is a path of specificity. I like to describe it as such. So everything is very, extremely personal. And Krishna will reveal a very specific type of mercy to each devotee. But as I said, but we have to hear. No? We will call, we will sing with Mamata, we will pray for mercy to overcome obstacles, but also we have to hear. Not only have to hear in the sense of how Krishna will respond to my call, but as we say sometimes, even while chanting, again, as you can realize, I'm not telling you only do this thing and that's the only thing you can do while chanting. There will be different moments. At some moment you can recognize some obstacle, pray for mercy for that, for overcoming that. But at some other moment you can try to hear what, as we said, what the name is trying to tell you. Because you can also, that's another way, you are praying to Krishna, give me mercy to overcome this obstacle. And maybe his reply may not come in a situation, but it will come in the chanting, in the name itself. Remember, name is Krishna speaking to you. It's not so much you chanting it. Don't take the position, I am the chanter of the name. But Krishna is revealing, trying to tell me something through the name, through him, his, the name. So I have to hear. To say that the first qualification of the good servant is that the servant will hear what the master is asking for. If you are a servant, you will be like attentive. And the master is like, plugging the bell, and he will run there and, yes, what do you need? No? But if the servant is like, the master is calling and playing conch shell and shouting, come, I need you. The servant is totally in his own world. Then he's not a servant. So first qualification of a good servant is, he's hearing what the master is asking. So if we want to become like faithful servants of the name, we have to learn how to listen to the name. How to listen in general. Well, listening is not so easy. Generally, we like to speak a lot, but we don't like to listen too much. No, we want to be listened, as if we have so many important things to tell the whole world. But we should learn to listen. And a good way to begin that is listen to the name. No? I mean, there's something for sure valuable coming from that person. That person is wanting to tell you something, Krishna. No? So try to hear the name. Try to hear what's your will for me. The name is talking to me. The name has something very important to tell me. What the name is telling me, I'm hearing that. I have to put lots of care and attention to capture that. Because the way God speaks to us is not ordinary. No? It's a very fine, deep. So it requires some attention. Nityam Bhagavata Sivaya. So with all this, our chanting will become, again, attentive, dynamic, alive. You have to churn. I have in some soundtrack to illustrate. So we have to pay close attention. Again, if you want to show regard for someone, you will hear that person. You cannot tell someone, I love you, but I don't like to hear you at all, ever. No? You will start to show your affection by being considerate, careful. And if the person tells you what to speak, I have something important to tell you. I mean, you cancel everything else you are doing. No? Upanishad, sit closely and hear. So the name has always something important to tell us. It's not that someday, I have something superficial today to share. No, every single day, everything is super substantial. So we should pay attention. And of course, we know part of the struggle with paying attention is to dealing with our minds, which at the present moment probably are not in their most enlightened stage. And that's what generally gets in the way of hearing the name, the noise of the mind. No, mind brings so much noise. Sometimes a day like today, a day of silence, is very, very revealing in that sense. It may be strong, it's heavy, because you start to realize how much noise is there. how much we speak too much with our mouth, so we don't realize how much noise is in the mind. Part of that mind noise comes through the mouth.
Yes.
Well, you shut your mouth. Let's see what your mind is, how the mind is behaving. eBay put the volume higher and higher and higher and higher. It's like, I'm going crazy, Maharaj. Let me break this power right now. I'll say, no, Krishna Jivani, no. I'm reading your mind at this moment. No. Try to take responsibility. Become aware of what's going on there. So the mind is, again, it can be the best friend, remember. No, it can be the worst enemy, but it can be the best friend. And it's interesting because, again, I was saying now that the name has very important things to tell us. And the nature of the uncontrolled mind is that it will present something insignificant as very important. And of course, the exact opposite as well. Something very important as that what Nam wants to tell us as insignificant. And that's why the mind goes shopping so many other places, thinking, something important, something important. Oh, neon light here, neon light there. And the name is shouting, here is the important thing. But the mind goes, again, the untrained mind, the uncontrolled mind, presents insignificant stuff as crucial. You need to go there. You need to hear. You need to pay attention. This is an emergency. False emergencies, all one after another. And the real emergency, no rush. Someday. Something like that. And also, mind, again, uncontrolled mind, likes to absorb in Rajagun on tamagun, as we already spoke these days. No, it's not so easy for the mind to settle in sattva, in the present moment. It likes to go to rajagun. Rajagun not only, and tamagun do not only have to do with future and past. Rajagun has to do with intensity. No, we want to experience intense stuff, adrenaline or whatever. And tamaguna means fantasy. No? When you are, how to say, daydreaming or whatever, you are like, fantasizing about things that will never happen, but you are just investing so much energy, mind, time there. So that's an addiction for the uncontrolled mind. No? Intensity and fantasy. Rajas, tamas. And it's running after that. And, oh, this is so important. This is so crucial. No. So that can happen. Again, of course, that's why we are speaking about that. That's why you are so serious at this moment. Because you may be feeling, okay, here I am. So we have to deal with that. And Patanjali, for example, in the Yoga Sutras, he will say, if you see yourself like attacked by these tendencies, again, not to point like there's some enemy outside, but those are the symptoms of an uncontrolled mind. So you feel these undesirable tendencies and coming one after another. One way, again, there are so many ways, but that is an interesting way of, again, becoming skillful in how to relate with that tendency. Patanjali would say, try to invoke the opposites of that. Try to meditate on the opposites of those undesirable tendencies. When the undesirable tendency is coming, instead of taking that and going deep into that, try to put pause, take a distance, and say, what's the opposite of this? And invoke a higher taste, if you will, more powerful meditation, if you will. It may sound mechanical, but it's a way of developing new habits, new way of behaving. In the beginning, it may sound like you will fail and trying, but if you have consistency, the mind will get trained, like again, uncivilized beast. No, you will become domestic. You will become a friend, ultimately. Again, there's nobody in the mind. It's not a person. It's just a tool that got accustomed to react to certain stimuli or whatever, and you now need to deconstruct and re-instruct, basically. No? So if you realize that you have developed some unbecoming habit while chanting, no? Then you realize, I got accustomed to do this, to do this naughty thing while chanting. Okay, try to focus on that one thing. Do not get overwhelmed with the other 10 ones. Begin with someone, with one of them. And try to determine, okay, how do I replace this bad habit? What's the good habit to invoke to counteract the bad habit? how I counteract past samskaras, past lower taste? How can I invoke proper higher taste? And that's powerful. I mean, because a habit, as they say, habits will create actions. You act according to your acquired habits. Another way of saying samskaras. So a habit will create actions. And actions, what? Will create our character. A different set of ways of behaving will create a sense of, that's who I am. And the character will create your destiny, sometimes they say. Your future. So it all begins with habits. Habits, actions, character, and destiny. So we want a certain destiny. So how my habits, actions, and character fit that destiny, correspond with that destiny, which is Golok Vrindavan, if you want to put it like that. Where are my habits today in relation to Golok Vrindavan? How those will inform actions that will inform a source of being, character, personality, that will match the identity I want to have there. So it's a gradual process of doing these type of things. There is hope. But begin on something again. Begin on something that you can deal with, manage. You can detect one single habit if you see this is not good. Okay, let's concentrate on this. What am I going to do to invoke the opposite thing? But do it in a sustainable way with constancy, not just one day and then again go back to the... In a way that you can sustain it on a repeated basis, one day, 2 days, 3 days. And that starts to change gradually everything. First, you need to get some momentum. No? Sometimes this is mentioned also. No? Sometimes we think that our spiritual progress will go like this. No? But generally, I was seeing one video the other day of someone who said that in the beginning, it will go like this, and it will do like this then. Like wave-like. Not like this. You follow? So you think, okay, I will change my habit today, and tomorrow it has to be necessarily higher. And then, but the first days will be like this, because you are taking momentum. Gradually, it will improve. No? But it has to begin in that period that you feel nothing is going on here. There's no change. There's change, but give time. So yeah, it's important to develop these habits, and gradually in this way we won't be victims of our own minds, we won't be affected by illusory energy. On the contrary, we have the famous example of Sri Haridas Thakur, which is a great personality in our tradition, called also Namacharya, who is Brahma. We'll in these days continue with Brahma Stuti in that connection. So Namacharya means he who gives the example as to how to put in practice all this Japa retreat. No, he's the one who teaches by example and by precept how to chant the name. And he was so ideal in his chanting that not only, I mean, we may think now I am a disciple of Maya. No, I'm the student, my mind is just in, but Haridas Thakur made Maya his disciple. No, this famous story that Maya personified appears as a prostitute and trying to tempt Haridas Thakur. You know the story, no? Haridas Thakur was chanting. He saw, and the lady was like, trying to take his attention and move him nicely and doing some mudras and silent glances. Haridas Thakur understood the whole thing immediately and said, when I'm finishing my rounds, I will satisfy all your desires. So the lady was waiting. She was sent by one Muslim governor who wanted Haridas Thakur to fall because he was an ex-Muslim, now become Hindu, and that's not legal or something. So he was chanting, but of course, to finish his rounds means a few 20 hours or something. He will chant to relax every day. So the lady was like, no, she fell asleep to say first day, so she left and said, okay, I'll return tomorrow. Maybe he finished that. She returned second day. I'm just finishing. Just almost there. Almost there. Just wait for me and all your desires will be fulfilled. So, again, nothing. And the governor, what's going on? She's asking the lady. We are getting him. So next day she's going. But by 2 or 3 days of being near someone like Haridas Thakur, so pure, and she starts to be there and look at his face and he's chanting and she starts to repeat the name. But jokingly, like Nama Bhada, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Come on, Hare Krishna, come on, quickly. Come on. But she starts to chant Nama Bhada in the association of Haridas Thakur. So it is said that after the fourth day or something, Haridas Thakur, he realizes she's ready. They say, okay, I finished. So I'm ready to satisfy all your desires. Which are your desires? And at that point, she's totally converted, transformed. She falls at the feet of Haridas Thakur and acknowledges, confesses what was her original intention, begs forgiveness, and said, now I've been transformed so much that these are my desires now. So Haridas Thakur says, okay, I'll satisfy them. He gives her Harinam, initiates her. She becomes like a renunciant lady and traveling and preaching the glories of the name. But he said that she was Maya Devi personified. You can imagine, no? I mean, already Maya Devi without being personified takes us like puppets like this. Now, what to speak the personification of that, condensing what single feature. And she became disciple of Haridas Thakur. We are disciples of Maya Devi, but by the strength of Nam, Maya Devi becomes disciple. So, some nice story in that connection. So let's conclude before inviting some reflections from the audience with some practical considerations. I've shared some, but a little few more before concluding, because we have not gone through much in that direction. So few practical considerations that may help our chanting, or may improve the quality of our practice. Some external adjustments that, as relative as they may sound, may help. So one of them, as I hope you already know, is that, as they say, mornings are gold. No? If you want to pray and to meditate, the best moment of the day is the morning. Ideally, this period called Brahma Muhurta. Again, I understand some emergencies, someone may be working, timings, life happens. But as much as we can make an effort to find those moments, the best possible thing is try to begin your day. The very first thing you do is you can chant. Sometimes I like even to chant, to wash my, go to bathroom, wash my face, hands, and start chanting immediately. Not even shower, tea, like, but just to, the very first thing I'm doing is like chanting. And then I, of course, shower, tea, like. I'm not saying you have to do that, but there are ways of trying to create this type of impressions. The very first thing I'm doing is this. Probably you can, the last thing you're doing, maybe something like that. And that will influence all that is in between, beginning and end. So it's important if we can try to, of course, when I say try to chant in the early morning, that implies try not to go to bed too late the previous night. No? Because say, Maharaj, I cannot wake up at 4. Yeah, because you're going to bed at 12. But if you go to bed at 8 or 9, of course, I understand that may not be possible for any reason, but if it's possible, it's recommended that we can do some arrangement. That's more sattvic, that's more, I mean, the days, the nature is guiding us, no? When the sun is leaving, he's telling you, okay, go to rest, and so on. So ideally, it's a plan you can have. Say, okay, tomorrow I would like to wake up at 4, and I had to make a plan today. I had to wake up earlier than usual to reach my 64 rounds, so I have to go to bed early. And I won't eat anything. Well, I never eat anything at night. But if you eat anything, you try to think, I will need something too heavy, because if not, I will have good resting at night, and it will be almost impossible to wake up in the morning. So you see how your Mangal Arti begins with the dinner of previous day's dinner, basically. You follow my point, no? So you have to be organized, if you will, skillful in that. It's not just like, okay, I'll try, and if it happens spontaneously, it will happen. It won't happen like that, probably. So sometimes you need to organize a little bit more. And also go to bed with that idea in mind. Okay, tomorrow in the morning I will get up early and chant and do this and do it. Because if there is no some determination, there are some other determinations, again, calcified during ages there, that will pull you in another direction. So we have to organize, learn to organize our day, our activities, not just being pulled by Rajaguna, no? Like whatever intensity and fantasy and running here and there, but as much as we can, try to have some structure. Structure is not bad, necessarily. You know? Rules are not necessarily bad, forms are not bad. So we should organize our day, not only to chant early, but also, I don't know, if I committed myself with my guru to chant a certain number of rounds per day, I should organize my day so I can finish that number every day. I mean, that's the idea. It's not that when he's asking me how many rounds do you promise me, I just say a number, and then when I can, I do it. No, it's a promise I made with my guru that moment. So better you promise something that you can do. With this, I'm not saying, do something that you can sustain also. Don't go crazy. So you have to be also realistic. How much can I do on a daily basis? Doing that attentively, not just running, I have to finish my daily number, and you try to do that again. Like Guru Nishtha made this comic, he was, one devotee was trying to impress one Vaishnavi, and the lady was, and how many rounds do you chant? And he says, 64 every day. And she's like, And then comes the second, illustration, and the guy is watching TV and chanting Japa with the two hands at the same time. So it's count double, no? So those are his 64 rounds. You say, no, thank you. Better commit yourself to chant three times less and do that properly. Mm-hmm. But my point is, if you committed to a number, again, it's not about counting on a number, but there is numbers. You eat three times a day, you do things in numbers a day, and if one number is lacking, you prepare for that. So we are not inviting anyone to be obsessed with quantity, but on learning to go beyond it as well, like today. Okay, you are generally committed to a certain number, but it's nice to transgress the number, if you will, or go beyond, not below, and sometimes chant more. Go beyond the what is already normally expected from you and offer some extra time, extra energy. You know? That will show how much you want. You follow my point? If you are going to work, you're expected to work from 9 to 3, but you stay 3 more hours out of your own will, and the boss will say, wow. You will capture the heart of that person. Why he's staying? Because I'm so identified with this. I want to add. I don't expect any extra payment, and just, it may probably not happen. I'm not saying you have to. But let's fantasize for a moment. Let's get tamasic for a moment. So the point is, if you do those extra hours naturally, that will take the tension of the boss. And we know who is the boss in our chanting. So, what else about chanting? Some practical considerations. Try to pay attention to your own chanting, in the sense of try to pronounce properly. Srila Prabhupada will say, try to sit properly. This is the famous recording of him called Sit Properly. Mm-hmm. Which is actually chanting Maha Mantra, but at one point he's saying to one devotee, sit properly. No? Because probably he saw the devotee was like... Mm-hmm. And it is said in Shastra, a crooked asana, a crooked body speaks of a crooked mind. No? So you cannot chant japa like... where is your mind in with that asana? No, asana is showing something. Again, it's something external. Of course, asana, the recommended asana is the Padmasana, but I understand also in practical terms, for some people it may be impossible because of their legs, their age. It's okay. But try to have an asana that, you are relatively straight. If you are not I'm chanting while I've thought about it. I'm going to sleep, and they put the japa mala and they're like, they fall asleep and the japa's there. It's not like that. No? You judge the fruit by the tree by its fruit. You can pay attention to what's happening. So try to try to record yourself. When I say that, I send a challenge on Facebook to the devotees. Record your chant one round and record yourself and hear if you are properly pronouncing each name, or even if you are skipping words. Okay. Because that happens. I sometimes did that myself. I confess that. I remember once my guru told me, you're skipping one word, some words. Have you heard? Record yourself chanting. He gave me the instruction. And I did that. It was embarrassing. Embarrassing, not what he said, but what I heard after recording. And I realized, I'm skipping words. Without realizing, of course, but I'm skipping words. So I may finish my rounds quickly, but I'm chanting something else. So it's interesting, just to be attentive, basically, and not to be in a rush. And of course, as we already mentioned, if you are at home, try to have some, if you don't have a temple room or something, but some sacred space or sacred corner that you can dedicate for your chanting and prayer, because sometimes it may be difficult just to chant anywhere, in a living room with people, what to speak in the street, and this, and the car, in the subway. I mean, so many things are going on there, and so it's good that we have some corner, at least at home, place that we can just, like, it's our shelter, if you will, for connecting in that direction, and creating a proper atmosphere, you know, if it helps to have a proper picture in front of, or you have deities at the altar, you can, like, project your sense of sight if you need for a moment and remind yourself, oh, Krishna is not different from Trimurti. Sometimes devotees have mantra cards, they call, like, is the Maha Mantra written? So you read the Maha Mantra while chanting the Maha Mantra, you see the syllables, like a way of, I mean, I'm not saying you have to do all the things, I'm just saying that sometimes for some people it may work, no? Because we may not be able just to sit and cry for Krishna. Or even sometimes it's say to have, Patanjali is always also saying this, if you contemplate the face of someone who is beyond the gunas, that creates immediately some impression in you. Mm-hmm. To contemplate the face of a saintly person, of an advanced, or to think about that person, it invokes the quality of that person, if you will, in your person, in your chanting. So you may be going into some whatever, rajasic, tamasic avenues, and you like think for a moment about your Gurudev, for example, and oh, that immediately aligns you with, no, he's not rajasic, he's not tamasic, so you invoke, you have a glimpse of transcendence, if you will, for a moment. Even indeed, it's recommended you can meditate when you are chanting, you are with Gurudev. He's not far away somewhere else. No, he's there. He's looking at you. No, you can have a picture of your guru. And I generally put a picture of my Guru Mahesh, and in the picture he's chanting. No? So I'm sitting chanting. I have him chanting in front of me. So he's chanting and I'm trying just to follow his footsteps. So he's looking at me while doing his chanting. So I'm trying to... So in this way you are trying to give satisfaction to Sri Guru who is there next to you. We have found the name by the grace of Guru. We have found the name by the grace of Gurudev, and the next challenge is to find Gurudev in the name, because that's his eternal place of residence, as we say. Nam can be a place of residence, and Sri Guru is the sadhu is residing in there permanently. So he is there. I found the name by him. Now I have to find him in the name. So anyhow, in conclusion, just to before reaching our conclusion, as we already mentioned, to make it simple and go to the minimalistic practical advice, when you chant, chant. When you pray, pray. Don't add a second engagement, basically. Try to disconnect from everything else so you can connect everything with that, all of your functions in that. No, don't do anything else. Try to practice that. I know it may not be easy if we are accustomed to doing something else, but that's a fundamental, elemental principle of good japa. Just do it, as the slogan says. Because again, when you are chanting, you are worshipping Radha and Krishna. When you are doing archana, you are not doing three more things at the same time, hopefully. And mine may be going, but still you are trying to be there. So you have to be fully present in their world. You are invoking Srinam, that's their world coming. Again, Golokar, Premadam, Harinam, Sankirtan, Nam, Rupa, Guna, Leela, Parishad, everything is there. So you are invoking that, you have to be present in their world. So as we mentioned, if try to keep that in mind, you will be protected. If not, if you don't have this determination in the beginning, I will do this sankalpa, I will treat this as a sacred relationship that deserves my full attention and participation, you are losing the battle before the conchal marks the beginning of the battle. But if you do your homework, you know, regarding all the things we have seen these days, trying gradually to improve our practice with proper, again, sambandha, what's the ontology of the name, what's the position of the name that's non-different from Krishna, or how it's higher than Krishna in one sense, acknowledging, as we spoke these days, about the obstacles that may be there, with caution, dealing with the principle of aparat and how it applies in our case, and as we said yesterday, how to develop a proper prayer attitude. If you have tried to do all this homework as much as you can, for sure you will be able to perceive divine grace coming to your life constantly in the form of Nam. So that's basically the main preoccupation we will have: how to be faithful to the grace that it has already came to our life. Remember the motto of the retreat: trust and follow grace. So grace is coming in the form of Srinam, knocking on our door. Trust that, open to that, and lead a life of grace with all that it implies. That's a very dynamic journey for sure. But that's the journey to the real destiny. So anyhow, I hope that some of the things that we have shared this last week almost serve some purpose in your life, and that your visit to Madhavan has been fully justified and more, not only because of the retreat, but so much just to be here is a retreat in itself. So I appreciate that you have taken the time and energy to retire from certain life dynamics and make the movement to come to the jungle and try to focus in certain particular direction. Also, I hope that some of the hopes that you shared in the beginning, the very first meeting, somehow were addressed, and also maybe some new necessities became apparent and new hopes are tied with those new necessities. So I hope that happened as well. And that said, of course, I'd like to ask if any of you would like to share a few words, because I also would like to ask you some little last homework, and there you may share in a more elaborate way some of your experiences in the retreat. But if briefly, you may like to share some words about your experience. In this case, I may ask the ones who have been. I mean, you can share some words for one day. It may be enough, no problem.
That's okay.
So, I don't know, a few words just to share with each other, whatever it may come. Yeah, everyone will have chance, no problem. Sumati.
I just felt, I guess because the first few days I was ill, so everything seemed more intense. I mean, it was already a very intense presentation of what is japa and what it means to really connect with Krishna's holy name. And it's, you know, something I've struggled with for so many years, trying to maintain focus, but your talks have helped so much, and I'm now feeling more hopeful than I've maybe ever felt that there, you know, Krishna is a person, and he's non-different from his names, and he's shown me throughout my life that he's there with me. He's protected me so many times. He's just, I've gotten so much grace and so much mercy. And so to be, you know, to connect that now with his holy names. And I think I saw that, like, japa was something separate. Like, you're talking about being prayer, that really speaks to me. About, you know, becoming conscious throughout the day, not that to categorize different things throughout the day. Well, now it's japa time, and now it's prasadam time, but it's all connection with Krishna, and that's who we are. Ultimately, is to realize our intimate, loving relationship with Krishna. And Mahaprabhu came to give us the way to do that through chanting these beautiful names of our Lord. So I'm so grateful for your discourses and just delineated things in just so much more fully and deeply than I've ever heard before. So that's, that gives me hope that I really can address the obstacles that are obvious to me, but I'm sure there's many more that I'm not even aware of yet, but the ones
in the next
aware.
Retreat. Huh? The next retreat we'll speak about that.
But I feel like I have some substantial support and guidance to move forward in my relationship with Krishna through the holy names. Okay. Thank you so much.
Right. Who else? Your permission?
Yeah.
Like shy some words?
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't categorize everything so nicely as she just mentioned, but I echo everything she just said. I guess one thing that stuck with me is that the name is non-different from Krishna, and that's something that I'm really, really trying hard to meditate on as I'm chanting.
Mm.
Because I don't want to be like, as you said, like, I don't want to be like Krishna is coming and just being like, just looking somewhere else or thinking about my work. I didn't notice myself like moving to thinking about my work or something. And how am I gonna get on class on time and you know, all these different things. Like, but it's like chanting. Of course, it's a consciousness throughout the day, but especially when I'm chanting, like, just everything else has to be in the background. And, to really focus on that, because if I don't mentally think about I'm entering the space where I am going to associate with Krishna by his name, then as you said, I'll lose the battle from the beginning. So that's, I'm just really trying to think about he is non-different from the name, and like, I cannot be a bad host.
I cannot be?
A bad host.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's a good one. Bad host. Who else? Someone else? Camera is waiting. Dr. Teresa.
Well, I agree with what Sumati said. And
individuation, so you have to say something yourself.
In addition to that.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many adjustments that happened interiorly. And externally that made things align. And the underneath it all is the lesson, again, of the value of sadhusanga. Because so much of what you presented here, sharing your own heart and your own realizations and things that you have gotten from your gurus and integrated within yourself, has put an entirely different perspective on the holy name, on approaching the holy name, on the life of a devotee, on being a devotee, on being prayer. I mean, everything, every aspect of my being has been touched by what was offered during this retreat. And the value of sadhusanga is, it's really immeasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard classes on aparads, and it makes us want to run off a cliff. And, you know.
There are many cliffs here.
Yes, many cliffs. And, yeah.
That's what I'm emphasizing so much, don't be neurotic, because I know there are so many cliffs here.
I didn't want to run off a cliff after hearing 2 hours of class on aparad. I was like, oh my God, I want to go chant my japa without aparad.
Right.
I want to engage in devotional service in the right way, because now I have a beautiful understanding and purpose behind all of these somewhat even seemingly empty kind of ritualistic things, or even backwards and negative ideas that I've had, that I've accumulated due to my own nature. And, you know, just so many, like a chiropractic adjustment, you know, and now the energy can flow properly throughout my life. So, sada sangha.
Ki jaya. Vivo. Thank you so much, Victor. Someone else would like to share a few words of your experience? I don't know, Lisa, or Raj Sundari, or Jason. Just a few words. I will ask you to share not so brief words in written form. So just a few words.
I seem to have had a shift.
Yes.
I don't know if you understand what I mean by shift. The spiritual shifting.
I hope so, yeah.
In my mind, body, soul,
spirit. Yeah.
I'm a little confused because I want to understand everything. And I can't understand
no.
the understandable.
That won't happen.
So I've accepted that. My thing is, I was trying to resist being trapped with my hand in a bag and having to sit there. Because at home with my job, I grow, I'm in nature, I farm, and I'm always talking to God. Always, through the spirits or through the nature spirits or whatever. But I think I got it. It clicked in my brain about having a devotional time with God, having, like, this is my umbilical cord to Him, my japa.
Mm-hmm.
It's my lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
And He wants me.
Mm-hmm.
He wants my attention. So I have to sit down and give it to Him.
Thank you. Adi. Who else? We have two here. Red Sundari.
I have heard many wonderful things, and I'm sure I will listen to those classes innumerable times. Also, I missed a few of them, so it's regrettable, so I have to listen to those. So far, I got a lot of inspiration, and it's like through your talks, but also through presence of all the devotees. Definitely also this point about Krishna being immediately present there is like really helpful. I guess I heard it so many times, but it never really clicked.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's what they say, but I don't know. The way you presented it, kind of like...
I was 2 hours pounding on that post, so maybe that helped as well.
So I have to really like listen again and
yeah.
digest, and if it ever even fully happens, maybe not.
Can always happen more fully. So.
Thank you.
Jason, some words of your unique experience these days.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My deepest gratitude, Swami, for sharing all your knowledge, wisdoms, insights, and experiences. I have no word to describe the whole experience. I don't think there is a word for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm grateful, and I know I'm overwhelmed. I look back, it's already been more than a week.
You survived.
I made it. And yet I felt like I just arrived.
Okay.
So I'm thankful for everything. That's my deepest gratitude.
Thanks so much, Jason. Kishore, we are waiting for you here. A few words. I know you want to take the Mauna Bratha very seriously, but just a few words about your experience. And you are cooking also, I mean, you are doing lots of things.
Yeah,
but if you will, just a few words, your experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's been sorry, my head's in a different space. I'm in a cooking space.
Yeah.
For me, it's been interesting to see how Sangha can how Sangha deepens one's own personal japa. You know, kind of the group support. Kirtan classes, just the inspiration of seeing others doing japa and so forth, how much that can inspire one's own japa when one's by oneself and one's able to kind of take that sangha in. So, yeah, I'd say that's probably been one of the biggest inspirations for me during the festival. To have all of you guys here, inspiring me in my own sadness. So, thank you.
Yeah. Madhuvanki.
Dad.
Well, Purasa, want to add something?
Just a quick thing about the Madhavan Vasis here. You know, we have been opulently given the opportunity to enter into this retreat by their grace also, and by their hard work. And if it, I'm probably going to cry, if it wasn't for their sacrifices and their service, we wouldn't have the opportunity.
Shri Madhuban ki jai, Madhuban Vasis ki jai. Good. Thanks so much for everyone for your words and also that last note, which helps to broaden the whole thing, to understand it's not only about one thing, one person, but as we say in the beginning, it's a whole teamwork, and of course we need the stage to be in place for that to happen, and Madhuban is that unique stage with our, of course, Guru Maharaj's presence, blessings, this area, which made all this possible as well. So he's as well most substantial part of this retreat, although he's physically somewhere else. He's here in many ways. So by the grace of all these personalities, we are having this unique opportunity. So thank you so much to all, and of course to all some of the devotees who for different reasons are not able to be here at this precise moment, Gaur Sundar, Shyam Sundar, Krishna Jivani. We will ask them some other insights later. And before concluding, if you give me a few minutes, before concluding, some few recommendations that I'd like to share regarding how we can try to keep this momentum, again, going back home. What to do in the after retreat, because one thing, we come here to retreat, but of course the healthy concern is how can I keep this, whatever all the things you are saying and your experiences and your feelings, how to kindle that fire and not let it go disappear, basically, no? So how to return home, back home, if you will, with the proper attitude after a japa retreat, if you want to put it like that, no? And of course one of the attitudes, I hope you have it clear, is to continue with this attitude, to continue developing my japa. It's not just I came here, I did it, I have my PhD or something, but it's an ongoing affair. Not only, the retreat was nice, the seminar was beautiful, but I won't be able to sustain this after, outside. Because if you already start thinking like that before trying it, again, you lost the battle before starting. So that's important that we still are here, still the environment, the momentum, everything's, try to take that momentum and meditate and determine, okay, when I return in my daily dynamics, as much as, of course, it's sustainable and realistic, I try to be focused in my chanting and where I want to reach through my chanting, and not only where I am today also, but where I would like to be and what's necessary to be there, and so on. Also be careful of not becoming critic if someone is not chanting japa correctly, because now you came after japa retreat. No, so you know all these fancy things of how to do it, although you may not be doing it yet. But this tendency may be incremented after a japa retreat, paradoxically. You will see it for yourself. No, you follow my point? Because you receive many things, okay, this, how to do this idea. And you see someone else who's, No, and you're like, project casting the... So try to control that impulse. I actually try to develop compassion and appreciation. Okay, I received this, whatever is valuable here, I'll try to extend that to others in a compassionate way, and try to inspire them in a loving way. Again, never in an imposed way, chastising, I'm the one who knows you are doing it wrong or anything like that. And try to keep humble, of course, after the retreat. No, it's not that, again, because you came to the retreat, now you are fully the mega master of japa or anything. No? You have participated in a japa retreat, of a japa workshop, but that doesn't mean that you will always apply correctly all the things you heard here. So, be humble. No, I'm saying that mostly to myself. No? No, because even if you are hearing or talking, given the lectures about how to do ideally, that's one thing is that, one thing is the sitting, one thing is the talking, another thing is going on there and sitting and do it yourself. So, let's keep humble. And increase our humility. And also something that will help to keep the momentum, as Kishore said, and many of you as well, is try to keep the association with those that you can share an interest, common interest for these things, and keep that alive. No? So you can share this common, deep common interest about chanting, and how we can develop the chanting, how we can increase the spirit of prayer, how can mutually, like, enlightening one another, enthuse one another, sharing experiences in your own chanting, or reuniting, meeting, chanting together, meeting online, whatever. I mean, and together analyzing how to overcome different obstacles, whatever, all that we spoke, so we can increase our chanting. Even you can communicate with one another on a daily basis, like how they say, checks and balances. Yeah. How is your chanting going on? Because that helps too. You have someone else not watching over you, like how are you doing today, but it helps us to keep the thing in an ongoing dynamic, if you will. So you think and pray what may be useful for that. And also let's look forward when we can repeat the experience, no? Because as we say, this is not just a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Okay, I already know, no need to hear the same thing again. We can even repeat the same seminar next year, exactly the same things, and it will be, oh, okay. It's never the same thing. So let's see which form this takes in the future. And let me share with you, before finishing, some little homework, with your permission. Some written homework, some words that I invite you to write, if you want, no force, but if you feel inspired to. Of course, some things you already say, but sometimes putting it again in writing form helps to think about them in another way. So you can share, you can write about the unique insights and experiences you feel you have had, that Srinam gave you, gifted you in this retreat. No, how the name gifted you with some unique insights, experiences during this retreat. That's one thing. That's only one. We'll come a few today. Some new things that you learn in the retreat that you would like to incorporate in your chanting, which are those. Sometimes, again, writing them down and putting in the list help to, maybe you then can put a paper in your wall and you'll, when you're, oh, okay, don't forget you want to do that. So those new things you learn, of course, there may be many, but those that you feel especially I need and I would like to make them part of my chanting. And of course, in another line also, those things that you would like to avoid during your chanting, that you maybe realized now that you should avoid, that they were there. So those things that you may like to correct, to avoid. Another thing that you can write some thoughts about is about, for example, those obstacles that you know you will have to face when trying to improve your chanting. Again, to have a clear picture a map of where you are, where you want to go, what will happen in between. So you are already prepared, and it's not, oh, I didn't know about that. So according to what you experience here, some of those possible obstacles you probably may have to meet during their chanting. And of course, then what will you do to overcome those obstacles? No? So you're not taken just by surprise and what to do now. So what to do when they are coming, we already have trying to speak about that. And a few more points. This one and the last two next ones, if you, if possible, I will appreciate if you can send them to me. Of course, if you want to send all, I have no problem. But at least the three last ones that I will share now, I will appreciate. One will be, which is the thing that you like the most in the whole retreat? And which are, or something that, that's one thing. Another thing will be things that you feel were missing. It's possible, no problem. I'm not expecting just key jais here. And not only regarding the lecture, the class, but in regarding the whole experience, some things that you will like to, or you will like to add or to include in a future retreat experience. We can all, there's always room for improvement. And also some last words, just to conclude, about what Sri Nams, what the holy name means to you in your life today. No, not tomorrow. Hopefully you can write this today. So after the retreat, what the whole name means for you in your life today. So you can write that, whatever, written form, or send an email if you want to share this last one with me, whatever you feels better for you. So that said, we officially conclude here our Japa retreat. And I thank again all of you very much from the depth of my heart. I appreciate the fortune and the opportunity my Guru Maharaj has given me of trying to perform that this service for all of you, in his service, but in your service as well. I'm really blessed by having the opportunity. I mean, I can own all of your words and make them mine and try to repeat them by your association. Also, my own experience of chanting has reached a new level, but it's by the grace of my brothers and sisters also, very big part there. So I look forward to not only to repeat that in a year again, but to continue in that spirit till we officially meet physically in another retreat, no? Or something like that. So today we will, as you know, we are spending this last day of the retreat also trying to focus intensely in the chanting. So those who are trying to chant a little bit more than usual, maybe reaching the lag or whatever, and also we are engaged in the Mauna Vrata. So apart from these prescribed periods of meeting and talking like this, and in the evening, we are trying to enter into silence. Krishna says in the Gita, in that particular, say, Maunam Chaiva Smi Guhyatunam. From all secrets, I'm silence. From all secret things, I'm silence. So in silence, he is there also. No? So try to understand when we invite to this, is another invitation to find him in a very secret way. So let's try to take advantage of the remaining of the day in that direction. And the next 2 days, for those who are here with us, we will continue nonetheless somehow with an extra official overflowing of the retreat. Tomorrow is Sri Krishna Janmashtami, so we'll be celebrating the birth of Krishna, the birth of God, the birth of the unborn, how that fits. We'll try to explain about that. So we'll have lecture tomorrow at 10:30. Today we will meet in the evening as usual with Q&A and some reading. And tomorrow, Sri Krishna Janmashtami, 10:30 in the morning. And the next day we will have the appearance day of Srila Prabhupada and Nandotsav, which will be another way of continuing speaking about that. Remember, we started the whole retreat with Baladev Purnim and with Srila Prabhupada's journey from India to the West, and somehow from Balaram now we'll go to Krishna, from Dauji to Gopal, and from Prabhupada to Prabhupada. And all this trying to make some full circle, trying to keep this focus on the centrality, essentiality of Srinam. So we'll in this way conclude the retreat these days. And for those even who stay a little bit more, some of you will stay even till the end of the month, or probably more, like Braj Sundari, probably more, probably forever. We are preparing the Samadhi section for the Bhagavan buses, so no problem. We will have also some other lectures on the Brahma Stuti starting 2 days after Prabhupada's appearance, next Monday, still we have the last section of the prayers of Brahma, so we will conclude that section that I have started like 3 months ago here in Madhava, very auspicious closing of the curtain. So we'll stop here and we'll continue with our chanting, Mauna Braddha. Any questions? Any yet?
Question.
Yes.
If we're chanting extra today, can we do the writing tomorrow?
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't consider that point. So yeah, you can do it. I said what Nam means for you today can mean tomorrow. Okay. Tomorrow will be your today. So if you do. So yeah, no problem, no rush, no urgency, then don't collapse, please. Keep focusing what you are focused today. Jai Shri Harinam Prabhu ki Jai, Srila Gurudev ki Jai, Shri Man Mahaprabhu ki Jai, Shri Prem Sankirtan ki Jai, Shri Dauji Gopal ki Jai, Shri Madhavan ki Jai, Shri Madhavan Basis ki Jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki Jai, Gaur Premanand Haribo.